My name's Sean Collier. I'm here with Norlax Belma in the Honda Civic.
Hey.
We just saw some James Bonds. How you feeling?
I'm feeling dangerous, feeling like I want to go break a bunch of laws and not get in trouble for it.
Yeah, I always walk out of those, like, feeling like way more of a badass than I actually am. It only extends to the walk.
Right.
I leave the theater and I can walk down the street like I'm a little dangerous, but that's about it.
It all ends the second you come to that first red light and you obey it. Mm-hmm. That's when it all comes to a screeching halt.
And the franchise almost came to a screeching halt, but not quite. We'll get into it this week on You Can't Handle the Truth.
And now, it's You Can't Handle the Truth. Honest reviews of the newest movies. Part of the Epicast Network. Hear more great podcasts at epicast.tv.
It is You Can't Handle the Truth for Friday, November 6, 2015. Me and Norlax are in the car.
Yeah.
Chilling in the Honda Civic. Where I used to do bonus episodes, I'll do bonus episodes again someday. Did you ever hear any of those?
No, not the bonus ones.
It would be me. It's usually me alone, and I just do it on the way home from the theater and do a little 20-minute thing. But with very few exceptions, the movie that people are interested in is the movie that we're recording about.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, do I want to sit here talking to myself for 20 minutes about, I don't know,
Pacific Rim,
the Goosebumps movie, or do I just want to go home and enjoy my life?
But it's usually, I would hope it's the latter more often.
I'm trying to enjoy life now. So, but we'll get more bonus episodes coming back someday here. In the meantime, we're in the car. So, after the podcast, I can drop Norlax off at Nico's.
Go tell some jokes to some humans.
You're in that hustle every day.
Yeah.
Much more than I am. Do you get antsy if you're not up for a couple of days?
It depends. If I'm sick, or you know, I had just a lot of things going on, and I kind of know. But if I'm just being lazy and it's 2 days, man, that whole day that I know I'm getting on, I'm just like, oh, come on, showtime. Let's get to the mic.
I gotta get more in the habit. I have enough going on that by the end of the day, I'm not like, let's go out and do one more thing.
Exactly.
But, you know, we were talking about it. That's how you stretch. You know, if you only try new stuff out in your comfort zone,
then it won't ever really get as good as it could be.
Yeah, and you'll only write to your strengths. We were talking about a mic that I won't name that's kind of in a horrible environment for comedy. But I was about to say to you, it's like, why don't I write some stuff that works there?
Right.
So then I have that in my back pocket when the crowd is paying absolutely no attention to what's going on.
You just hit the nail on the head. Mm-hmm. Because you know, at the end of the day, if you can get something to work there,
right,
then you can walk into the most comfortable and stand-up conducive situation, pull that five out, and you know it's going to work. You just know it's going to work.
Well, in addition to lighting up the comedy scene, Norlax also the host of...
Well, now the Norlax Belma Hour.
The Norlax Belma Hour is the new name. Yeah. You're basically trying to... You're leaving radio broadcasts for generations to come. Like all of Prince's secret albums.
They're just gonna... You won't know about it until way afterwards.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I'm liking what I'm doing now. I do really miss the old show. I do miss my co-hosts a lot.
This is on WRCT in Pittsburgh, by the way.
Yeah, and I miss that. I miss having them to bounce stuff off, sometimes be the foil.
Mm-hmm.
Or if I can steal a term, be the heel. I'm always cool with that.
Yeah.
But now this show is literally whatever I want to do. So if I want to have somebody cool like you on, I can just talk to you for 45 minutes. If I want to play my stand-up for an hour, I can do that. If I want to play... stitching together three of Obama's best speeches, I can do that too.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really enjoying it. you kind of hit it too. I'm cool with not advertising it.
Right.
I just like it being there.
Right.
You know, people will get around to it eventually, but let's just have some fun with it.
We did one just about a week ago.
Yep. That's coming out next Tuesday.
Oh, okay. Well, where can people hear that online and in the area?
Okay. So online, you can stream it WRCT.org next Tuesday, or I guess Tuesday at 8 p.m. And if you're in the area, it's 88.3 FM on your radio dials.
And those are all archived, so you can go and listen to as much as you want yep. right now, right?
For the Knowledge Bomb Hour, not yet.
Okay.
Because this is literally the first, you know, 2.5 months of it, so I've literally just been running it out, seeing what I like to do, seeing what I don't like to do. But I have all the recordings, so when I decide to put them all out, I'll start a page with just 20 weeks of episodes already, mm-hmm. just off bat. And then, you know, sequentially put up week after week after week.
It's a good show, though. It was a good. The last one was good, and this is a nice, you know, the Norlex Belma Hour, like you said, is a nice free-form kind of setup for it.
Oh, man, this, I haven't been, I was very comfortable with the old show, mm-hmm. but there was a lot to manage. I had to
right.
manage could kind of be the wrong word, but a lot to keep my hands on in terms of producers, camera crew, my co-host.
Mm-hmm.
This is literally, I just text my producer, hey, I want to do this thing next week, and I'm going to send it to you.
Right.
And just play whatever I send you. I'm going to record this person, or I'm going to put together an hour of stand-up that I really like. And mm-hmm. it's like I said, it's very comfortable for me, and I still get to exercise my creative juices, you know?
By the way, as we're doing this, I'm getting to the bar in the most Pittsburgh way ever. Where it's just like, I know it's that way. I'm just going to keep driving until I see something I know.
Yeah, and then we're going to make it work.
I mean, I'm not going.
We're in the hill right now.
We
right?
are. I was about to say, I'm not going in the wrong direction. But now I'm realizing I'm about to run out a hill in about 2 blocks there.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go right and see what happens.
It seems like making a right in Pittsburgh usually always, you find something that you recognize, yeah. a Sunoco, mm-hmm. something like that, Kogos. I like to use my Pittsburgh landmarks as churches and gas stations, I guess,
mm-hmm.
is what I'm trying to say.
And comedy spots, obviously.
Oh, not even close. If somebody brings up a neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
if there's a place where I do or have done stand-up,
mm-hmm.
my first words out of my mouth, oh, yeah, I'm over there all the time, you know.
Right.
No, I'm not there socially. I'm there working, and then there's a little bit of social life
mm-hmm.
after I get off.
But anyway, I think we're talking about James Bond.
What's
your relationship to the series?
James Bond, the series, I remember I have fond memories of being maybe about 10, 11, 12, 13, and becoming hip to the Pierce Brosnan. How do you say his name?
Pierce Brosnan.
Brosnan.
Mm-hmm.
But my real connection to it was the GoldenEye game.
Yeah.
That's how I actually got kind of hip to what was going on. I didn't really start watching the movie seriously until this generation of it with Daniel Craig.
Right.
Because I was older, I could, like, go to the movie specifically to see this.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have much memory of specific movies with Pierce, but I do know these movies.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, right. Pierce, the best Pierce Brosnan James Bond is the GoldenEye game.
The game
yeah.
specifically?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how many of those I saw. I know I saw GoldenEye, because I was pretty young when those were coming out as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I... Were there 3, 4? The World Is Not Enough was in there.
Okay.
Tomorrow Never Dies.
Tomorrow Never Dies, I saw. I remember that.
But the legacy is Pierce Brosnan's face on the N64 cartridge.
Forever and ever. One of my favorite... I think we've spoken about this before. I'm a Colbert guy over Fallon.
Mm-hmm.
That's no slight to Fallon. My mind has peaked a little more with Colbert.
Uh-huh.
One of the funniest thing that Fallon did was like second week of his show. He brought Pierce on because he was promoting some BS action movie that he was doing. And the game that they played was, hey, I want to play you in GoldenEye.
Mm-hmm.
And they played against each other. It was actually really funny.
Just tell me that Pierce Brosnan knew how to play GoldenEye.
No.
Okay, yeah. In my head, he sat around for 6 months cashing checks and playing GoldenEye.
Here's the thing, though. In your head is also what would have happened if it was you or myself.
Right.
I feel like because we're from that gamer age.
Mm-hmm.
It's like current NBA athletes and NFL players, right? Mm-hmm. You know that those guys play Madden all the time.
Yes.
But they do have the all-pro and all-league teams from decades. I don't think Ditka is sitting around playing Madden 15 as himself in 65.
No, you know, probably
not. I don't think he's doing that.
Probably not. But I didn't grow up on James Bond like some people have.
Right.
I remember seeing a bunch of them when I was around, you know, maybe 13, 14, and enjoyed them, but it didn't hook me like a lot of things did. It didn't make me a fan. But the thing I like about them is they're movies.
Yes.
You know, they're
motion pictures.
You are in for Hollywood. Mm-hmm. I mean, you are going to go all around the world and somebody's going to have dinner on a train. Mm-hmm. Somebody's going to get in a fight in a helicopter. Right. Some buildings are going to blow up. Everybody's going to be really good looking. It's a movie. Right.
And I can get down with that, too.
Yeah. No, you need that every now and then. That's not to condescend to it at all. It's like, yeah, this is entertainment. This is film entertainment the way it should be, you know?
One of the things that I kind of like about Bond, which I think is lost in other action movies or even series for that matter, like take that in Mission Impossible, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a certain level of fantasy with Bond.
Yeah.
That like, okay, you know that can't happen.
Right.
But with Mission Impossible, I think it's kind of lost with this newer generation of action series. It's almost like they try too hard to make you believe that is feasible.
Yeah.
And Bond, like, I think like you're saying that it's a motion picture. It's you're down for the fantasy of it. I don't want you trying to tell me that a human can run up scaffolding in Africa like that, like he did two movies. Like that's not realistic.
Right, right. And the weird thing is now a James Bond movie looks slightly more realistic because we have so many Furious Sevens and Mad Maxes where it's like, you didn't drive those cars out of the plane and everybody's fine and, you know, Tyrese is making jokes on the way down.
Yeah, that wasn't happening.
I mean, even these James Bond movies, which are way over the top, no doubt, you know, you still are thinking, I don't know how he's going to get out of this one. I know he is going to get out of this one, but exactly. I don't know how he's going to get out of this one.
How do you pull it off? They got you strapped up, man. How are you going to... Oh, right. Yeah, the thing. There you go. I do take to liking that.
So I had seen them. I liked them. But the first Daniel Craig Bond movie, Casino Royale, is definitely my favorite. And the kind of thing that I can watch whenever it's on cable.
Same.
And that one really moved, you know. I mean, that's a long movie. This is a very long movie tonight, about 2.5 hours. But the Casino Royale really moved along and had a little bit of fun with it, too.
Yeah, I enjoyed Casino Royale. I think it's mostly what you're saying. I like movies that I know that there's motion to it, right? I know that there's a steady progression. One of the things that I'm kind of not a fan of this was, I feel like there was too much milking of scenes happening.
Oh, yeah.
I don't need as much of them walking through this. And that's a part of all the Bond movies. Mm-hmm. But this one felt especially more.
Yeah. So to get into Spectre a little bit,
right.
I'm a little disappointed by it because I felt like, yeah, we're stuck behind a bus right now. It's going really well. See, I can't run the GPS and record the show at the same time.
It's all about priorities.
I feel like they went in two directions at once
with this movie.
With this one, where it was the most old school James Bond. It starts just with the James Bond thing,
mm-hmm.
with the theme music
and the shot
scope. But it was that throughout. There's a lot of ridiculous scenes and kind of, you know, Batista's in there as the very old school Bond, like heavy.
Yeah, right. The hammer, the guy who's bringing it.
There's a lot of that going on, and yet it's also tries hard to be a little bit heavy. You know, they really try to put the weight of not the franchise, but this run, the four Daniel Craig movies.
Right.
They try to really hit, you know, this James Bond's emotional state more than they might have. So it, you know, one scene will be really goofy and fun and over the top, and the next will dive deep into the plot and what's mm-hmm. happening and what happened in the last three movies.
Backstory that wasn't actually backstory.
Yeah.
Just, you know what I mean? Yeah, totally.
And I kind of just felt like it was, here's a bunch of scenes. I wasn't really committed to the story of this movie.
Yeah. Let me ask you this, though. Not being interested in it, you weren't upset at what they were doing, right? It didn't,
no,
like, bother you what they were doing. It just didn't appeal to you that much.
No, it was like a lot of action movies where, yeah, there's the good guys and the bad guys. I'm just here for the action sequences.
Got it, right.
So I didn't have any problem with it. It was more just, I think you guys think I care more than I actually care.
Or you guys want me to care a lot more than I'm willing to care
right.
about this right now.
Right.
I want to make sure that, you know, for the sanity of the people who are going to listen to this, I don't want to obviously ruin anything.
Yeah.
But one thing that I think is kind of cool to just point out, and it ties into what we were just saying, I didn't like how much of non-existent backstory they created.
Yeah.
You know, like, for me, it's like, okay, don't try to culminate all this when there was no heading before this.
Right.
Each thing was a standalone movie, and now you're making me try to figure, you know, that kind of annoyed me a little bit.
Yeah, they now, how do I do this? That's
right. I'm really trying to parse words here,
they,
too.
They got into Bond's deep backstory. And I don't really remember from Skyfall. Was that in the last three at all?
No, I can't. I've been racking my brain since during the movie. I can't remember much of the references that they try to make you think that they told you already.
Uh-huh.
I just can't quite pull those out of memory yet.
Norlex, you ride the bus.
Yeah, I do.
Is this a normal amount of time to be sitting on a residential street?
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
But sometimes you get people who are jerks and double park
uh-huh.
in Pittsburgh and then walk inside knowing that this is the very last city to double park in.
Because uh-huh.
you guys got streets in this city that are two lanes of parking on both sides
yeah.
that should be one way with parking on one side.
Right.
And I think that might be kind of what we got caught up in here.
You think the bus is stuck?
Yeah, I think the bus got stuck behind a car over there. See, well, I think we got some movement. Movement. See,
I finally turned the car off.
And that's when we get to go. People are weird.
What was he doing?
I have no idea.
Yeah. Anyway, James Bond.
Right.
Yeah, it's if any of that deep backstory, or all I'll say is where they went with the villain.
Right. Okay, that's probably a safer way of putting it.
Yeah. If any of that was teased in the last three movies, it wasn't enough to make me remember it. Right. Right?
If it was, then they did it poorly.
Yes.
Because yes. a movie series, an emphasis on the word series, a movie series like Bond, if they were going to do that, there'll be some things that you would not miss.
Right.
And the second you saw it, you'd be like, oh, Casino Royale.
Right.
Oh, like, it would pop up like a bad pimple.
And the first two movies were not all about, but had a lot of how deeply he felt. I'm going the wrong way now. What do you think?
About your directions or...
about the podcast?
Yeah.
No, see, over that way is the top of Pitt campus.
Right.
Oh, if we get there, I'm good.
Yeah, we could take that over down center.
Exactly.
And be fine.
Well, I'll keep going this way. That's the other nice thing about Pittsburgh. Eventually, you get so high on a hill that you can just look around. Like, oh, there's that river. Okay.
Oh, that's the cathedral. Okay, straight well, I'm ahead. Going west of that.
Mm-hmm. The first two were a lot about his relationship with Vesper, mm-hmm. Eva Green's character, and we can spoil Casino Royale, how messed up he was after she died.
Yeah, after all that happened.
That's a lot of what Quantum of Solace was about, too. And he gets a new love interest in Spectre. And the actress is great, Lea Seydoux.
Yeah, she was very good.
I love her. She's gorgeous and exactly what a really good Bond girl should be.
Instead of just a pin-up glamour all the time?
Right, right. She's got her own look, got an accent. I think the accent is important to the Bond girl.
Very true.
And really, like, holds her own in the movie. But... You know, they kind of half wrote that in. They kind of went halfway on, okay, now he's really in love with her.
Mm-hmm.
Not a spoiler. What do you think was going to happen? And, you know, if you're bringing in, okay, these four movies are a unit, and they keep mentioning Vesper in this movie, they keep hitting him with it, then for him to just be like, all right, good. This is the love of my life now.
Now, this one.
It just seems a little thrown together more than anything.
Right, and I think that's the thing that we were talking about coming out of the movie. It just seems like they tried too hard to put a bow on it.
Right.
And in doing that, they forced things into holes where there weren't.
Yeah.
And then they created gaps at the same time. Like, there wasn't space for all of that, and then you also didn't give me some of the things I actually needed.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't do that.
And really dragged it out way too long. You ever think you would be on this street? I don't know. There's the cathedral.
I've actually been up here.
That's
yeah.
it. Just like you said, there's the cathedral. All right.
Yeah.
Over that
one. University Prep High School is up here, and I used to run a program for some kids up here, so I actually know... this little area, pretty. It's actually one of the more historic neighborhoods in the city. This little carve out the hill. There's a name for it I can never remember. Something. Is it Something Heights? I'll remember and text you about 3.5 days from there. Yeah, that's the school right there. See?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
This is the new podcast. Local comedians in a car getting lost. That's
what we're doing. Yeah, I like that. Actually, that happens in every city a lot.
Yeah.
Every night of the week.
But, I'm kind of nitpicking a little bit here, but I don't know. I haven't made up my mind yet whether I'm on board with this one or not. There's a lot of good about it. I still think Daniel Craig does a great job. Lea Seydoux, like I said, Ralph Fiennes was in as M. He did great.
Mm-hmm.
Really owned it.
The guy, Christoph Waltz, man, even though he didn't have an incredible amount of, like, you know, verbose dialogue, he wasn't saying a lot. He's just a great actor, and he was the person to play that.
I wanted a little bit more from him.
Agreed.
And I think we're figuring out that his range is not necessarily... I don't know. He probably does have great range. He's just always asked to do kind of the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's a little bit of Inglourious Bastards and Django and everything else you've seen him in this.
The mannerisms and stuff like that.
But you know what? He has two Oscars. He knows what he's doing.
Yeah, I'm not gonna tell him not to do something.
Right, right. And he did well. The direction is great. Sam Mendes. I mean, he really knows how to make, you know, a nothing moment look like a photograph, you know?
Yeah, totally. I'm happy you mentioned the photograph. One of the things that I've always been very happy with seeing, one of the things I always look for in the Bond movies is how they shoot the picture.
Mm-hmm.
Like, literally the actual, like, whoever the DP is, or they are, depending on the movie, then some of the... Half of movie making is, you know, obviously the actors and the script. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the other part of it is the presentation of it and how you frame it for people.
Right.
Even some of the simpler moments that we're kind of referencing, just what they do in shooting it, the angle, or sometimes I can tell there's a slight lens on it.
Yeah.
It does bring out a lot more of the moment than if they didn't.
Look at this. I finally got a sense of where I am. And
then detour.
And the road is closed.
This is where me and my ex-girlfriend lived for a year, right?
Oh,
there,
okay.
With the satellites. Yeah.
How was it?
She was cool. Nah, yeah. It was good. It's a great spot. It was central. I've always lived in this area since I started doing stand-up, because I can get to every open mic in the city within 20 minutes, and that's on purpose.
Look at how much of this is... What are they doing over here? Do you think you could direct me there at this point?
Oh, I could totally get you there.
Okay, then then just start. Listeners, sorry, there's going to be some directions.
Yeah, it's actually just going to be two or three turns, but you guys can still listen to us being handsome and smart.
Exactly.
But yeah, I like how they shoot the movies. In this movie, they did some really complex shots.
Yeah.
A lot of the helicopter stuff, even though obviously there was some green screen and CGI, still you have to manipulate the camera in a particular way.
Mm-hmm.
So I did like that. Sometimes movies are, for me, are better shot than they are performed, if that makes sense. And this wasn't one.
Yeah.
This was not one of those.
Yeah, the acting and the directing are way ahead of the script, I would say.
Totally.
But at that, a lot of the setups, a lot of the set pieces are great. The opening 15 minutes,
mm-hmm.
you kind of get your money's worth.
Right there. And then they say, we're going to start the picture now.
Yeah. And that's the best James Bond opening. Like, you don't know where he is or what he's doing, but he's doing it.
He's being James Bond in a James Bond way. Is it Casino Royale? Whatever's the one where they're running through the scaffolding?
Yeah.
Is that Casino Royale?
Yeah.
That is one of my favorite movie, like, montage scenes, period. I just love how they pull that off.
It's the only good movie use of parkour. It's like, no, man, parkour is awesome.
You didn't like, what was that, Takers, the movie that had Hayden Christensen and T.I. and Chris Brown?
I think I missed this.
They were bank robbers. They had Chris Brown doing parkour all over New York City. It looked ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And not ridiculous as in, like, cool. Ridiculous as in slightly absurd.
No, I think I skipped that one.
New Yorkers would trip you if they saw you doing that nonsense in Midtown at 3:30 in the afternoon on a weekday. You crazy?
But, I don't know. Was this a good movie?
Yeah, it was a good movie.
Yes.
It was a good movie. Was it a great movie? In my humble opinion, no.
No.
Good movie. Could you go see it alone? Could you take your friends to go see it? Yes. Is it something that you need to see more than once in theaters? I would venture to say no.
No. That's pretty much how I felt about Skyfall, too. You know, if you catch a little bit of this on HBO later, you might stick around for a while.
Right.
And you'll probably enjoy your experience in there. But, I don't know that... I don't think any of the three since then have lived up to the promise of Casino Royale.
Of how Royale set the table?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think Quantum of Solace is underrated. A lot of people hated that. I think it paid it off pretty well. Skyfall people liked a little bit more than me, but they kind of got logged down with the weight of it after the first one.
Right.
The first one, they really felt like they could just have a good time. And now, you know, they keep trying to, you know, make it a little bit heavier. And it'll be interesting to see where it goes next. We were both wrong about the status. We were talking before the movie. So it's expected that this is the last Daniel Craig movie.
Correct.
It's not supposed to be the last one directed by Sam Mendes. He signed on for...
five pictures?
I think for three.
Okay.
For Skyfall, Inspector, and this one. But now, I guess Daniel Craig said, I'm not ruling out doing another one. I think that's probably more the studio told him to go out and walk the line than he actually has any intention of doing it. But... the safe bet is that there's going to be a new Bond next.
Oh, totally.
And we were both confused over whether or not they had named somebody. Apparently what happened is there were unconfirmed reports. There were some, you know...
candidates.
So there was an insider rumor that it was already locked down for Damian Lewis.
Thank you. That was I couldn't remember his name before.
The best known as the lead for several seasons of Homeland. That he somebody, you know, inside the studio came out and said, "Yeah, it's him. That's it." They deny that, and they say he's in the running. But apparently, part of this was on had to do with gambling too.
What do you mean?
We can get out.
Okay.
There's various like sports books.
People put bets on who's
on who's the next bot.
Ridiculous.
Yeah. Mostly in Europe, there's some sports books taking money on who's the next Bond.
Did you know that in Europe they bet on American elections?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you can, a fun fact, you can bet on the Oscars too,
mm-hmm.
but it's all sucker bets. Because if you're paying attention, you know who's going to win most of the Oscars if you really look at it. So all of the favorites are, you know, you'll never make money.
Right.
And the only time that changes is if there's an upset, so then you'll lose a lot of money.
Like The Color Purple not winning a damn thing?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, so they... we're in the parking lot now, so you're getting some crowd noise here outside Nico's. Which, if you're in Pittsburgh, you said you recommend it for comedy on a Wednesday night.
When people come to town, I'm like, hey, you know, it's a spot you try to dig down to. Come down to Nico's. Nice, fun dive bar. People can hang out, smoke inside, and drinks are strong and cheap. It's like most of the places in Pittsburgh. Pretty cool.
Oh, but anyway, so this book is open on who's the next Bond. And apparently one day, Damian Lewis suddenly went from 33-1 to 3-1. And apparently somebody saw a memo or something and put a lot of money on it very, very suddenly. I don't think he's a good choice. Do you watch Homeland?
I have watched it. I don't watch it. You know what I mean by that? You know?
Yeah, I've
caught it before.
Some of the other, we can say it, some of the other white names that are getting tossed around make more sense to me. Mm-hmm. Like, people are talking about Michael Fassbender or Tom Hardy. Like, I see that a little bit more. I think...
I feel like they're too big of known quantities in other things. It always seems like Bond... When they get the prisoner's bond, they've had a career, but this is what kind of puts them on.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like they're already, like, very known quantities that they've become Bond.
And I don't think Tom Hardy is going to put up with that. I don't think he's going to sign on for five of them or anything.
He doesn't have to at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, to me, Idris Elba is such a good choice.
Idris is such a good choice for multiple reasons. One, he's one of the best actors out.
And
it's not even arguable at this point. Two, I mean, I'll take it there because, you know, it's going to go there. I think it's time. Let's have Bond, who's a black man.
Yeah.
And not just because he's black, he's also one of the best actors in England, period.
And like, suave as shit, too. Yeah. You know, I mean...
He would pull it off... If anybody's ever watched Luther... Mm-hmm. I dare you to watch Luther and tell me that Idris Elba couldn't play James Bond.
Exactly.
I dare you to watch that and say that.
The writer of the novels, Ian Fleming, had some ignorant shit to say about it. I don't think he really gets a vote anymore. I agree with you. I mean, there's been... Daniel Craig was seen as a departure because he
was the classic blonde look.
And blue-eyed.
Right.
But, you know... When you're in... The next one will be 25. When you're in 25 movies, I think there's an imperative to mix it up a little bit. Definitely.
And I want us to get to a point where this conversation isn't a hey, let's mix it up and do something different.
Yeah.
I just want to get to a point where it's like, this is the best individual for it.
Right.
Like, I'm going to swerve a little bit. The kid that's going to be the main person in the new Star Wars movies...
Mm-hmm.
Somebody made a comment, oh, it was a smart move for them to do. I look at it as, what if they had 12 people come read for it and he was the best read?
I think that has to be true.
Like, I don't think Star Wars would trifle with trying to be you know, trailblazing. I think they said, okay, you know what? We're starting this back up. We got to have the best possible kit.
Hold it. Garbage truck. Garbage truck, everybody. There we go. We're not going to a studio or anything.
Yeah, no, come on now.
Yeah, I mean, I see that conspiracy theory.
Mm-hmm.
I think that comes from a not such a good place, but I see what you're saying. You're saying we already have these demographics. Right. Let's try to get the other. I see where you're making that argument, but knowing J.J. Abrams especially, I think it had to be like, you know, who fits this character the best, right, out of who's interested in doing it.
Who can convey what we need out of this character, how we need it? I think that's where and it's not like they pulled the kid out of nowhere. I mean, that kid was a very popular actor in England. He had been on things that people in America know. Mm-hmm. So it's not like he was a complete unknown.
Yeah.
They just pulled a black kid because they wanted to have a black kid play the role. I don't think that's what happened.
This, I hope I'm right about this. So you saw there are like 9 dudes in Idaho who were saying, boycott Star Wars, it's anti-white.
Yeah.
Which is just hilarious. But I really feel like we're living through like the death cries of open racism.
Yeah.
That open racism has you know, spent, you know, a couple of decades fading.
Yep.
And now it's completely unacceptable in all circles. Mm-hmm. So the last diehards are going nuts.
And they're being publicly shamed for it. And it serves a dual purpose. Like, part of it is good because it roots it out. And then part of it just makes it more submersive, makes it more under the sheets because they know that they'll get excoriated for coming out and saying something crazy.
Right.
That was all nonsense to me. I think that some people can't handle seeing a black protagonist.
Well, this happened with the Hunger Games.
Oh, that was all that. I went crazy on the radio about that for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I was crazy about
that. And that was even more where the vast majority, I read the Hunger Games books, you can deal with that.
I still respect you.
The majority of the characters in the books were not identified by race in any way.
Right.
You know, I don't know if that was a conscious choice or if it's just, it kind of felt like it was written as it's the future. The races have been mixed to the point that it's not just really relevant to this storytelling.
Right.
But even one of the, there were two characters, there are, I think, only two significant black characters in the first Hunger Games. And one of them was identified as black in the book, and people just ignored it.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, chose not to hear that.
And didn't think they were being ignorant, saying, well, this isn't how I pictured these characters. Oh, so you automatically picture everybody white. That's nice.
Yeah, well, welcome to the world that we live in.
Yeah, this isn't to say, I'm definitely not saying racism is over. I'm saying that when you see stuff as stupid as boycott Star Wars, it's you know, the last few people who feel like they have to, you know,
stick that claim out.
Right, right.
It's one of, I feel like America, like, every two generations we go through growing pains.
Yeah.
So obviously you had the 60s and the 70s. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, 80s, 90s, 2000s was kind of, it happened. I mean, major events happened, but culture didn't shift as hard.
No.
And now, like, you're seeing that tectonic plate under the culture start to shift even more so in a way that's a lot more inclusive, a lot more taking down white privilege. Or even the fact that we're having conversations about white privilege has only been the last 4 or 5 year thing.
Yeah.
We've known about it for decades.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's happening. It's about damn time that it happened, honestly.
Yeah. And now we're into it. So, you know, tell me how you feel about this. Wait, Puzzle Packs, puzzlepacks.com, offer code handle. No, I know we're not going to shortchange them at all. Puzzle Packs is our sponsor. Puzzle Packs are fantastic.
Shout out to Gio.
Yeah, yeah, I'm doing great stuff and a great company, really hustling and trying to do it the right way.
I can't wait until one of the major sports organizations gets hip to that.
Yeah.
NFL, like, somebody's going to want to license that out, and Gio's going to be living in a condo in Miami in about 5 years, and I'm going to be visiting – Do a weekend down there.
Well, and and until they figure it out, I think it's under the radar enough now that you want to get a Steelers logo emblazoned on the side of your puzzle packs.
He can and has done it.
He will do it for you. Yep. Go to puzzlepacks.com, and it will be customized for you, a one-of-a-kind product. We've talked about some of the places we've seen them, like Atlas Bottle Works has their own. Geo made a few up for the Pittsburgh Comedy Festival with that logo. Oh,
that's cool.
Whatever you want, they'll put on it. And, again, you know, this is why he's going to make a lot of money off of this, because, you know, wine accessories are everywhere. Everyone has their, you know, little way to carry their wine bottles around and keep it cool. This is, you know, people will be raving over how smart a consumer you are when you walk into the party with your six pack in puzzle packs rather than a wet Coors Light box from the distributor. So go to puzzlepacks.com, use offer code HANDLE, and that'll get you $5 off any order. They have some other products like the coasters and the magnets. Those are not expensive. You'll still get $5 off that that order if you use the offer code HANDLE, PUZZLEPAX.com. But back to it. Now we're into the race issue a little bit more. And obviously, everyone's writing about the race problem in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Particularly with the number of, particularly with casting.
Yeah.
But kind of the bigger stuff, you know, is the director's chair. And how it's very, very rare in any movie, that any movie has a black director, outside of a movie particularly targeted for the demographic.
Totally.
If you shave those off, you know, there's no, you know, I don't think I can name a Marvel movie or a big Universal tentpole with a black director. And, you know, is there a way to force that along, or is it just a matter of time and people doing the right thing?
I think what's going to help force it along is what you're seeing now with, because now there's more black people with money, like producer money.
Right.
So what you're going to start seeing is more of those people just getting behind young black directing talent, such as Ava DuVernay. How do you say your last name?
I think it's DuVernay.
DuVernay. The kid who did Dear White People.
Yeah.
You're now finding the people with money, Will Packer, those type of guys, who are finding these young black talents because, as you know, Hollywood is one of the ultimate all-boys clubs. And
right.
You know what type of boys we're talking about.
Right.
So I think that's what is going to have to force it to change because they're not just going to let it in.
Yeah.
It has to happen outside of them and then say, it's a money thing.
Yeah.
And we're losing money not having these cats or this person's actually got some skill. Let's let them in a little bit. It's unfortunate that we have to talk about it that way, but that's what we're in.
And I read this in Hollywood Reporter over a year ago. Somebody saying the studios, the big studios, should agree to essentially the Rooney Rule from the NFL.
That. I would hate that. I would hate it.
And I think the Rooney Rule works a little bit better in the NFL because you avoid tunnel vision a little bit, because I think when you're looking, if you don't know what we're talking about, the Rooney Rule is now in the NFL, if you have a head coach vacancy,
you have to interview at least one minority candidate.
Right, right. I think that helps in the NFL because I think there's a lot of tunnel vision, like, oh, here is definitely our next guy. We're not even really considering anybody else.
The old DC or the old OC, right.
Right. In Hollywood, I don't know how that is going to work. I think if you get Disney to say, okay, we're going to interview one for every, you know, a major release, I still think they end up going with the guy they know.
Exactly.
Because it's not as though movies are conceived in a vacuum, and then 6 months later, they're like, let's find a director.
Yeah.
You know, it starts as...
It's usually a package deal.
Right. It starts as, oh, this is a Pixar movie. Who's next in line in the studio? This is a Spielberg movie, you know. I don't think that's going to do it. I think you might be right. I think that, unfortunately, the money is going to have to come before the motivation.
America, things don't really change in America until you start messing with people's pockets.
Right.
So, Donald Trump.
Yeah.
He started saying crazy stuff. He lost Univision. He lost sponsors. And nothing changes until you hit people in the pocket.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to be proactive about how we do it. It's, hey, you're not going to let us in. Cool. We're going to do all this and make you want to have us at the table.
Right.
We haven't really hit it yet to a point where they have to have young black directors, not even young black directors,
mm-hmm.
At the table. I mean, Spike.
Yeah.
But Spike being Spike kind of, the fact of him burned bridges.
Right.
Because he was so pro him and so pro black. I feel like he was kind of ahead of his time. They weren't ready for to deal with all that.
Right.
And somebody with a big enough mouth to say it all the time.
Well, and
they weren't ready for that.
I mean, I think that a big part of it with him is he wanted to keep doing his own thing.
Mm-hmm.
But how does Do the Right Thing happen and someone isn't begging him to do the next Superman movie? Like why doesn't that happen?
And it doesn't stop with just Do the Right Thing. I mean,
right.
I mean, Spike has classic,
yeah.
not classic black movies.
He has classic
movies.
Yes.
Like Americana classic mm-hmm. movies. And he hasn't been brought to the table. And this mm-hmm. is Spike Lee we're talking about.
Right. And speaking of him, and more recently with Ava DuVernay, that's the other thing that I don't know what the solution is when it comes to the Oscars.
Yeah.
Where she did not get a nomination for Selma. Before the nominations came out, she was being talked about as the favorite to win.
As a lock.
And then she doesn't even make the cut. Now you're really talking about, you know, an old boys network where there's a couple thousand Oscar voters,
mm-hmm.
You know, the average demographic is, you know, a 78-year-old white man. And not only is that the average, that's the vast, vast majority are 60, 70 and up and white. So what can you do other than write the article? When the shit goes down,
That ties all the stuff that we're saying together. Because if you look at it, it's the classic thing, right? So she was completely unknown, outside the circle,
mm-hmm.
not a part of anybody's network at all, really.
Yeah,
right. And then she comes and does this film, and the rest of the world and the rest of the movie world is like, OMG, who is this person?
Right.
But since she hasn't passed that table yet, they don't know who mm-hmm. she is. They're not even gonna let. Because what if they did let her be nominated, and then what if she actually did win?
Right.
It will blow the whole thing.
Right.
It will blow the whole operation.
Right.
So when that happened, I feel like that was very purposeful.
Yeah.
Like, my aunts and my mom still feel some sort of way about Color Purple.
Yeah.
The fact that they didn't win anything.
Yeah.
Like anything.
Yeah.
Like costume, nothing. They've still always felt like that was intentional.
Well, and it's, I don't think that the voters certainly, or
at least they got to be nominated. That's what I'm saying.
Right, right.
Two different things.
I don't think the voters, and I don't even think the media realizes that with Selma as the most recent example, that the fact that then it won Best Original Song is not an apology or is not a make good. It's not like, oh, look, the movie got a moment on the broadcast.
Yeah, that's nonsense.
Especially, you know, not to disparage, you know, it's always cool to, you know, win a best song Oscar.
Mm-hmm.
But especially when that's fundamentally has nothing to do with the film. Thematically, it does.
Yeah.
And but
there's a message to the song.
Right.
But
you're not necessarily praising the film. You know, there's plenty of you know, there's plenty of songs that have won that award where the movie was not that good. It just was the best contender for that award.
So
to say, like, look, Selma got something. No, it really didn't.
No, it didn't. Sometimes when they do it, it's like the movie. Sometimes some of those nominees aren't even movies that, like, even really popped. But like you're saying, the song cracked off.
Right.
That does nothing for the movie.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure that the director and the lead actor, lead mm-hmm. actresses, I know they're not sitting there like, you know what? Well, you know, I'm happy that the guys who wrote the song got an award. Nah, man. I went through all those years of training, all that time memorizing this script, all those days on set.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, that's almost a slap in the face. Almost.
So is there there's no clear solution to this other than age? That when enough of the voting base turns over, that's the only thing that can help? In terms of the award recognition?
Well, at this point, the first half of that statement was damn near talking about American politics at the same time,
right.
too. But I think it is an age thing, but like I said, I think the times are changing,
mm-hmm.
and you have more people who are able to do things outside of the established network. That's why the music industry, you could talk about Napster and all that, but the biggest thing to happen in music was in 2005 and 2006, when all the artists decided to start going indie, booking their own tours, independent tours, now that the record companies and the big people have to come to them. And we have to start seeing that happen with movies. Mm-hmm. A movie like Dear White People is the perfect example.
Yeah.
The kid wrote the thing when he was in college, was shopping it around, nobody wanted to pick it up, finally found some people who said, this is dope. Mm-hmm. They put it on, everybody was like, why didn't this come out, you know, big time?
Yeah.
And that needs to happen a few times a year.
Yeah.
And I think we're still about 5, 6, 7 years away from that happening more than 2 flicks a year.
Yeah.
You know, it's an unfortunate truth, but hopefully we're not having this conversation in 2025.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. And there's some, the willingness to put the marketing muscle behind it and really, I'll tell you, I'm getting...
The advertising kills these black movies.
Yeah. I'm already getting swag from Straight Out of Compton, so they won some awards.
Oh yeah,
you see the back of my car here. You see, I don't know how I feel about this item. You see that right, that bag right there. That
oh sweet,
that,
yeah,
that handbag.
That's actually kind of cool.
it is.
You'd be the toughest person walking through Trader Joe's with that.
Universal sent me. That's what it is. It's like your reusable grocery bag that says Straight Out of Pittsburgh, and I open it and it's like, oh, that's cool. I don't think I can carry this around. I don't think I can wade through the social implications of this item. I know the whole project is a Hollywood movie, but it's like, hey, remember that protest album that lit the world on fire and woke people up to realities of life in post-Reagan America? Now it's a bag that I put my groceries in.
Like, yeah, I got some squash in here.
Yeah. So that can be an overnight bag. I'm not carrying it out much.
Yeah, that could definitely be socks, boxers, gym shorts.
I have some pajamas in there right now. That's
smart, man.
Work.
You're ahead of the game.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, we're going to let Lex go do some comedy right now.
Oh, gracias.
But what do you have to plug? Where do you want to send people?
I'm trying to get a lot more active on social media. Mm-hmm. In the last 2-3 months, I've taken like a proactive energy towards it. You can find me on Instagram and Le Twitter at NORLEXSAID, Norlex said.
Mm-hmm.
My full name is Norlex Belma, NORLEXBELMA for Le Facebook. I'm trying to get bougie a little bit, and so I added Le where it's not needed. You know?
That's nice.
That's really that. I haven't really set up if you want to listen to my old radio show, just go to soundcloud.com and just type my name in and all of them will pop up. And probably in the spring, I'm going to start, you know, putting out this Norlex Belma Hour thing that I'm playing with.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I get to do whatever I want with it, so there's no rush.
Yeah.
There's no rush on that.
My comedy this weekend's in the middle of nowhere, so
I didn't even talk about that. Yeah.
Do you have anything coming up?
I got quite a few. You know, this is going to be one of my busiest months.
Okay.
This comes out, Friday?
Mm-hmm.
So Friday I'll be doing the Comic Wars and the Blue Light.
ArcadeComedyTheater.com.
Saturday I'll be doing my second Fire Hall show, and I had a ball on the first one, so it's going to be with Matt Wolfoff.
Oh, okay.
And then I have there's a comic who's blowing up in New York named Subha Agarwal.
Oh yeah, she's from here.
She started here, yeah.
Yeah, she started a little bit before me, but I did a bunch of shows with her like my first year.
Word.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's like really taking off in New York.
Mm-hmm.
So she's doing her first shows back here at the Maker Theater the day before Thanksgiving.
Uh-huh.
8 and 10, so I'll be on that. And then I'll be at the Pittsburgh Playwrights with Aaron, Mike Sasson, Ed Bailey, the Saturday after Thanksgiving. So I got a lot of cool things happening. And my birthday is next Saturday. I got a
Happy
lot of
birthday.
Cool things this month.
My next couple are kind of in the middle of nowhere, so I'm just going to plug somebody else's show. You've heard Missy Marino and Connor McCandless on this show before.
Love those two.
Have you seen their musical improv duo, Baby Grand? It's unbelievable. The thing I keep saying is, I the first time I saw one of their shows, I walked into the theater in the worst mood I've been in years.
Mm.
Just, you know, why am I here? Why am I even awake right now?
This is nonsense.
And within 5 minutes, I was falling out of my chair, laughing my ass off.
That's what's up, man.
They have a show this Saturday night at 10 p.m., Saturday the 7th at 10 p.m., at the Cabaret at Theater Square downtown. They're going to improvise a musical.
Really, at the Cabaret?
Yes.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And if you're anywhere near Pittsburgh, that's the thing to see this Saturday night. You've heard them on the podcast before, but they're really, really funny. Don't miss that
one. No slight against Missy. Connor is one of the most talented comedic people I've seen, period.
Oh,
that dude is crazy good.
They are both. That's a world class team. They would be doing exactly what they're doing if they were in Chicago, if they were in New York. We're just fortunate that it's in Pittsburgh.
Do you see his old group, Hipsterpotamus?
No, I heard
that. That's when I first got hip to him.
Yeah,
I went to two of their shows. Like, this group was okay, but that guy is something else. Then I saw he started popping up at the arcade, and I guess him and Missy are doing that thing now.
Mm-hmm.
That's great.
And Spectre, I don't know. There's a lot of good work happening there, so I can't give it a bad rating. But I also think I can't go above a 6 out of 10 because, in addition to the problems with the story, I was a little bored from time to time in there. Like you said, they really dragged it out. It's 2.5 hours long and would have been a way better, you know, 100-minute movie.
Yeah, they could have easily made that, easily made it 100, and it'd have been a lot tighter.
Yeah.
A ton tighter.
Nobody's going to have a bad time in there, but I'm not going to tell anybody to run out and see it either.
Yeah, no rush.
Where would you go out of 10?
Out of 10, I will go...
I should ask the guest first.
That's fine, because I was actually going to ask you if we could rate it by grade.
Okay, give it a grade.
Like A, B, all that type of stuff. I will give it a strong, cautious B.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So it's like, it wasn't shitty for me to be like, I'm giving it a B for the sake of it. But it wasn't like amazing for me to be like, yo, this is a B plus A minus A.
Right.
So I give it like a strong but kind of cautious B.
And go see it if you feel like. I wouldn't, if anyone was like, oh, I really want to go, I was like, go, you'll have a good time.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But
go to matinee though, because you might be annoyed when you pay the $12 for it.
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah. You might be annoyed.
You'll get $8 worth in the first 20 minutes.
Right.
And then the next four is stretched out a quarter at a time
they
over the next 2 hours.
They want that $4. They want that $4.
We're going to get out of here. We got to come up with a new ending because I have Aaron do a voice.
Oh, word.
But he's sick of it and won't do them anymore.
It happens.
What's your shortest joke? You have one that comes in about 30 seconds?
Not one. The shortest one I have is the Pittsburgh parking chair thing.
All right, go. Here's a little bit of on-the-spot, awkward, bad environment stand-up comedy.
Now I'm 25, my habits and things are changing.
Mm-hmm.
And I realize that when I walk into a venue, the first thing that I do is I look for the fourth finger on the left hand of every woman. And it made me realize that wedding bands and Pittsburgh parking chairs are the same exact thing. Because it's understood that I shouldn't move it. But if I do, it makes it a lot easier for me to just glide on in there. Now it doesn't.
Go see Norlex Bell,
man. Oh, yeah, man. Thank you, man.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to You Can't Handle the Truth. Find your hosts on Twitter at Sean Collier, PGH, and at Aaron Kleiber. That's Kleiber, Kleiber. And follow us at Epicast TV. Head to www.epicast.tv for more great podcasts on the Epicast Network. You can email feedback to handlethetruthpodcast@gmail.com. Epicast.